The Home Depot Home Improvement Show, brought to you in part by DryPro.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Answering your home improvement questions every Saturday on WPT. Presented by Charlotte Comfort Systems Heating and Air Conditioning and Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical on News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WPT.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
David, good morning. Welcome to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show.
Hey, thanks, man.
You're chilling, huh?
I'm chilling.
Good for you. Stay at the house a bit.
Finishing up the week.
Stay at the house a bit. Chill a little bit. All good. Folks, this is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave, and we are going to talk home improvement. Go figure. It is the last weekend in October. We are 1 week away from the change back to standard time from daylight savings time. And we have lots to talk about. We're getting ready. We're changing seasons. And when you own a home, changing seasons usually means a couple things. And we'll talk about them today. One of the things that we always talk about, and I've got a couple, we've been talking actually for a few months now about one product, but it's time to fall bug-proof the house, right? The bugs and rodentia all want into your beautiful home. So we'll talk about keeping them out. We'll talk about shutting things down outside. What do we got to do to kind of winterize the house, if you will? Things that we've put off for a few months, a few years, a decade or two. We'll talk about that. And surfaces outside and how to get them ready for the winter, and then maybe how to get them set up so that they don't require quite so much maintenance. In 6 months, when we're having this conversation about, hey, it's springtime and we're only 1 week away from daylight savings time and it's time to think about whatever it is, God willing.
Can we just skip forward to that?
I don't know. I can't decide if that's a good thing or a bad thing. No, live each day. It's all we've got. There are no guarantees for tomorrow. Make today the best.
There you go.
And if yesterday was the best I got, no, all good, all good. We're going to talk about cooler weather and auxiliary heat. Natural gas is on the rise. If you're heating with natural gas, I saw a thing on one of the public service things last week at some point about the cost of oil in the Northeast, where many, many homes heat on oil. And one guy posted for 77 gallons of oil, he paid $500, maybe?
I can't remember.
Yeah, that seemed, we've never heated with oil, even when we lived in Chicago. Although the house I grew up in had an old coal bin from an original coal-fired furnace or boiler, whatever that was. But we'll talk about some things you can do. Well, we're not going to talk about things you can do. Well, we will to make sure you're as energy efficient as possible from a heating perspective, but then also maybe how to stay comfortable and still dial down the thermostat a little bit. So we'll talk about that. Although it's kind of a cycle, you're going to burn electricity and it's getting more expensive to produce electricity. And therefore we'll feel a little bit of that, but we'll be smart about how we do it. And then I thought we'd talk a little bit of home safety. It kind of hit me last week when we spent a lot of time we spent virtually the entire show on fire safety, right? And then I'm like, well, maybe we should talk about safety at large. So put a couple things together that I think will be good topics for just for home safety. And then, of course, we'll have our product of the week. And we got some tips of the week. I don't know what emails. How does email world look in your? It's for you, David. You do all that
stuff. That's been fairly slow. Have a couple in there. Have one probably falls right in line with electric panels and safety.
Oh, okay.
So we can maybe touch on that a little bit. I've been trying to read up a little bit on what was said. So I think we could talk a little bit about that. And I think just common sense probably prevails
usually
that question.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Okay. So those are all the things we've got. We've got 2 hours ahead of us. So grab a cup of coffee. We're taking calls at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. You can send us an email. You can go to AskJohnAndDave.com and click on the questions button. Or you can just send us a note at questions@AskJohnAndDave.com. You got to spell out the and. David, I was on the phone yesterday, Thursday, I think, with a company that's asking us to look at some software to consider for some of our customers. And the guy, in the middle of the conversation, well, not in the middle, early on, but into the conversation, he goes, "Hey, I checked out your website." I was like, HomeDepot.com? He's like, no, AskJohnAndDave.com. You got a radio show? I was like, yes, I do. Could we get back to business? Anyway, he was trying to be nice, which I genuinely respected. All right, so it's out there, AskJohnAndDave.com, 704-570-1110. Lots of things to talk about. Getting ready for the winter, bug-proofing the house, being safe, shutting down, and whatever else. We got to take a break here in a second, so we're going to go ahead and do that. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave, and we'll be back after these important messages. Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon. And somewhere out there is David.
I'm Dave Doval.
There he is. let's see. We're taking calls this morning. We're at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. Give us a call. We'll talk about what's important to you. Right now, we're going to talk about getting ready for the fall, the fall attack. The attack of the six-legged and eight-legged and four-legged creatures who do not want to be outside and want to be inside. And so we're going to talk about how we keep them out of your home. I'll tell you what, David, I've got that big retaining wall in the back by the pool, right? And so it's time for me to redo that. So I was prepping the surface and taking all the old junk off. There are like centipedes by the billions living in that wall. Like every time I hit a crack, you know, and with a hose and the cleaner and stuff, like they just came out from everywhere. It was crazy. It was like biblical. Anyway, that's absolutely useless information. Let's talk about keeping them out of your house. So, David, what do you do to keep the bugs out of your house? Do you use any of those electronic devices? Have you tried those?
I have not. We haven't had a lot of problems in the new house, but I guess because we're concrete or travertine around the bulk of it with gravel. So I really only have the front side, the north side and the west side have landscape. So, and of course everything's really tight, so there's no place for anything to come in, believe it or not. Isn't that wild?
That is pretty good. That was going to be my questions. Do you think it's just because you had total control over building this house and you got it buttoned up pretty well?
It's buttoned up and it's dry. There's not, we have the big overhangs on the house, 2 feet. So it has to rain a lot for the moisture to wick up to the house, actually.
Got it.
And since we poured the driveway, it's been dry on the east side of the house. So it's, I think all those things work.
It makes sense. Many of us, however, live in houses that we didn't build, and so it's time to bug-proof the house. We're going to talk in a minute about some things that are designed to be energy efficient, but also help to bug-proof the house. But first, there's just good old faithful. At least it's been good old faithful for us, or for me, for Barb and for me, because we've just used it twice a year, and it has been super efficient. We'll still see bugs in the house, but they're they're belly up. They're dead. And the two products that we've been using are Ortho Home Defense sprayed all around the perimeter of the inside of the house. And I get a little pump-up sprayer. I buy the big gallon jugs of it, the refills, and I get a pump-up sprayer, and I go up into the attic, and I spray down. You know, I've got baffle boards in the attic so that my insulation stays clear of the soffit vents. And I just shoot down the baffle board and along the perimeter there, and because that's where I think those big palmetto bugs, as we are wont to say, but they're the technical, it's an American roach, I think is what it's called, and it's a big old thing, and in certain arenas they have, you know, in certain states they have races with them, and they bet on them and stuff like that. I won't opine about what states those are. They are called palmetto bugs. But they tend to hatch, thrive in dampish places. And the damp silt that sits in the bottom of your gutter, if you've got a little bit of pooled water in the gutter, is the perfect spawning ground for them. So I get down in there, and that solves all kinds of problems. So that goes all around the house. And then on the outside, I still use triazicide. A lot of people shudder because it's a chemical. It's a strengthy chemical. You don't leave it around for kids or anything like that. But I don't put it where, you know, pets or anybody would have access to. It just goes around the entire perimeter of the foundation, which means underneath the deck where nobody's getting at it, and, you know, behind shrubs and stuff like that. That seems to do the trick because we're in a very heavily wooded lot, and there's lots of wildlife that wants to be in. In fact, I went out and put some like deer repellent, and there's a version that we've used that's super effective also. Uncle Ian's. I get it at the local Home Depot here, but it's super great. All of our neighbors complain about the deer eating certain kinds of plants. We have them right out there. I have a stocking, one of Barm's old nylon stockings with this stuff in it hanging near the plants, and not a single problem. But I put it out because we had raccoons. We had a little baby raccoon wandering around the deck the other morning. So love the wildlife. Actually, I kind of think it's cool, but wildlife is for the outdoors. So that's it. Now, the thing that, Dave, we talked about as a product of the week a couple times is a product called Safer, S-A-F-E-R. That's a trademark, Home Indoor Pest Control. And it's a bit like more after the fact. I don't know that it leaves a residual barrier like the Ortho Home Defense does, but super safe for kids, pets, and so on. It kills ants, spiders, silverfish, fleas, roaches. It says kills on contact. So I don't know if it has the residual effect that the Ortho Home Defense does, but gets great reviews, and it's 100% organic products. Cottonseed oil, clove oil, which you can imagine is probably pretty effective. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember all the stuff that's in it. So that would be worthwhile. There's aerosol versions of it. There's pump spray versions, you know, little trigger spray versions of it. If you want to be, if you've got smaller children or pets, sensitive pets, that might be a very good alternative for the versus the Ortho Home Defense. So,
you know, also wanted to mention about the cedar side products. So we talk a lot about Cedar Shield, the preservative for wood. It's a sealer, or basically it stops wood from rotting. But they also, with the cedar oil, make mm-hmm. all kinds of products for spraying around the house, your yard, even on your skin. And my sister, who lives in Florida, she was telling me that since Ian had come through there and some of the water was still standing in places, the mosquitoes were worse than ever. And so I had mentioned it to her, and she sent me a note this week saying she had bought some products, and they had not bothered her when she's been out in the yard, the mosquitoes. So pretty good. And I think it takes care of a multitude of bugs. It's a little pricey, but it actually goes a long way. But it's much safer than other products. It's like what you were talking about. It's safe. So for your pets, you could spray it right on your skin, you know, some of it, not all of it, but, and on your pets. So it keeps ticks, mosquitoes away types of bugs. Yeah. Plus, pretty neat. And it has a nice smell.
Yeah. I was going to say the cedar smell is awesome. That was the other thing that this gentleman who I was on a business call with, he's like, "Hey, this cedar side stuff looks pretty great." I'm like, "Do you want to talk about that website or do you want to sell me some software?" Anyway, apparently that was quite attractive. All right, so we're at 704-570-1110. We're taking phone calls. We'll yammer on all day if you let us. So give us a call. Tell us what's important to you. We're talking about ways to keep the bugs out of the house. Those simple things are just good. There's some stuff naturally that you can do, like don't leave open containers of food and pay attention to the fruit. Keep it, don't let it get funky on you. I guess all that stuff I really am not an expert on, that are just good common sense things. But one of the next topics that we wanted to tackle was was getting ready for the wintertime. And we always talk about going around your house in the attic and in crawl spaces and on exterior walls and wherever there's a penetration. So a vent pipe in the attic, a hose bib on the side of the house, or a dryer vent, different things entering or exiting, through the walls in the crawl space. Those are all places that you want to make sure you've done a good job sealing up. And it does a couple things. From an energy efficiency perspective, in certain scenarios, it's going to help save money, but also it helps keep the critters out. And we're going to talk about a couple products that are designed that will actually kind of kill two birds with one stone, if you will, since we're now talking about killing all manner of wildlife. I don't really mean that seriously, but we'll talk about a couple products that will take care of both of those opportunities. We're going to be right up against a hard break here, so we're going to go ahead and take it. But it's a chance for you to get your questions together and give us a call at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave, and we will be back after these important messages. Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
And we are taking your calls. We're at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. Give us a call. Right now, we're going to do our Home Depot product of the week. And as we start thinking about goings on inside the house, it's time to think about what it looks like. In our product of the week this week is a waterproof, life-proof, waterproof luxury vinyl tile. There's a bunch of different colors, a bunch of different designs, but this stuff is heavy duty, right? So when we spoke about LVT a few weeks ago, we talked about understanding the thickness and understanding the wear layers. This is the best. It's waterproof, so it can be used in kitchen and bath applications. I'm looking at about, I don't know, it looks like about a dozen different colors. The price on it, you could do a 12 by 12 room, probably around $550, $600. So it wouldn't break the bank, and it's going to be there, I won't say forever, but it's going to hold up to pets and traffic and spills. So, that's it. That's our Home Depot product of the week. Life proof, waterproof, luxury vinyl tile. It's a plank product. Check it out. It's a good one. All right. We have been talking about, getting ready for the winter, and we took our break speaking about things just clearing up or closing up, rather, the penetrations. So dryer vents and hose bibs and penetrations through the roof that you see, from the attic side. And there's a lot of products out there, but we've spoken in the past about great stuff. And David, I remember when that came out, and just in the red can, and you usually ended up throwing about half of it away because you did what you needed to do, and then there was no way to deal with it after that. They've come so far with applicators and products, but there's a couple products great stuff makes. If you're sealing up a penetration where there could be heat involved, they make, I want to say it's red, But it'll be labeled correctly on the can. There is a, is orange the bug prevented? I think orange is keeps the bugs out. It's got a pesticide in it, so it seals up, and it also has a pesticide. So there is a very user-friendly product. If you're, I don't know, David, do you think investing in the professional, you know, wand, for want of a better term, is a wise do-it-yourself investment?
Well, I mean, if you have a lot to do, it is. It's worth it. If you're sealing up a bunch of holes, so you know, if you were to be able to go in your crawl space and use the orange foam to fire stop wires and pipes penetrations in the crawl space, I think it probably would be worth it. Or if you were putting in windows or doors, but other than that, I think if you're just touching up, I really don't think you need it.
And then I
did want to throw something out there. So a lot of the foams, if you leave them exposed to sunlight,
right,
will deteriorate over time. So and one of the things that I've always done is I'll use that foam for bigger holes. But then what I do, I let it dry, and then I'll go back and I dig out a little bit of it. And then we either use mortar if it's in a brick foundation, or we use the transparent caulk. OSI makes a caulk that is crystal clear, so it'll pick up the colors around. So if you're using it on brick, if you have a little bit of it, you can fill in that hole, and that will stop the sun from degrading the foam. And it's kind of like a backer rod, if you think about it.
Okay.
It keeps you from losing so much caulk. And then, of course, if it's on brick or something like that, you can always use our trick and I'm sure other people have done it as well, but we'll take an older brick, we'll find it, drill a bunch of holes in it and collect the dust. And then after we put the caulk on, we'll just kind of throw the dust at the caulk and it will stick to it. And it kind of disguises it a little bit. It's not as shiny.
It doesn't stand out. Yeah.
Sure. It makes for a good, for a nicer repair.
Awesome. Awesome advice. So I think that's just a piece of the puzzle that we would say pay a little bit of attention to. And it feels overwhelming. I know when we first moved into this house and I just got up in the attic and I was like, okay, I've got to really get after. It was a house built in 1985 and there just wasn't that much attention paid.
Right.
Well-built house, but there wasn't attention paid to those simpler things. It felt daunting to have to go deal with all that stuff. So don't deal with all that stuff. Just pick a section of the attic and one weekend get up there. This is the perfect time to be in the attic. Now through, you know, spring, it's going to be cold up there, but much better to put an extra jacket on and get in the attic than to just sweat yourself to insanity when it's 140 degrees up there. So it's the perfect time to get up there and just pick one or two areas and get after it. Pick one side of the house and get after it. So it's just, you know, the classic, how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time. So that's how we're saying we think about it, right?
Well, and I wanted to mention something too about crawl spaces, and something that I've made a habit out of through the years is before I go in a crawl space, I will generally walk around the perimeter of the house and see if there's any penetrations. So I know how to protect myself when I go in there, because you don't know, you know, if there's holes, a hole around the Freon line, which is what I see a lot of times,
right.
You know, a snake can get through there with no problem.
No problem. Yeah. They can get into crazy places.
And I'm kind of okay with, you know, I'm not okay with it, but I would rather know ahead of time and prepare myself that there's the potential that you may run into one versus just being startled by one. And that's, well, I mean, I've got some knots on my head, so I can tell you where they
you
came
stand
from.
Stand up in a 2-foot crawl space.
So, yeah. So, but you know, that's the other thing. If you want to keep those types of varmints out of your crawl space, that's what you have to do. You got to keep that space closed and sealed, and that'll stop that.
We talked about that with when Mark Steiner was with us a couple weeks ago. Those kinds of things. But then also the other thing we talked about, you just want to know what's going on when you get into somebody else's crawl space. We said in our own crawl spaces, just put a lot of light down there. Run lights and turn them on. It's just like, it just, you know, it's like anything else. Bring it to the light and things get better. So, all right, we snuck past the break here, so we're going to go ahead and take it, folks. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. We'll be back after these messages. Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
704-570-1110. 704-570-1110. And we're back. We're taking questions. Give us a shout. David, I'm going off script here for 2 seconds. I don't know if I got enough time to read. I have time. I just, this whole thing. I'm looking back to tip of the week for February 10th, 2007. And this tip comes from our Tight Makes Right file. If you're a regular listener, you know that we caution our listeners about making a house too tight that is sealed so well that moisture can't escape. That's a good advice, but today we're going to talk about a situation where tight is right. If you've noticed dark lines or a dark area around the perimeter of a room that has light carpet, we're dating ourselves now because most rooms don't have carpet, right? You may be puzzled as to why this area that gets no traffic appears dirtier than the rest of the carpet. The answer is simple. Air is being drawn from the outside or from an unconditioned space because there is not a tight seal between the bottom plate of the wall framing and the floor. This is particularly prevalent in homes built on a slab. I'm not sure if that's true or not. I feel like it happens on second floors and stuff too. In the past, we told you that you can remove the carpet or just pull it back, then run a bead of caulk or non-expanding foam in the gap. That would be our great stuff between the baseboard and the wall. We have an easier and less messy way to do this, especially if you don't want to remove or pull back your carpet. We told you a product called Backerod, also known as Caulksaver. It's a great foam product that comes in multiple diameters, 3/8 to 3/4 inch. Folks who sell, anyway, if you take this Backerod and a blunt tool and tuck it up between the bottom of the base and the carpet, you seal it up and the black spot goes away.
Mm-hmm. And you know what works good for, you talk about a blunt tool, a paint stir.
Yeah.
Works really well for that.
I use that and did it over, I had pulled the carpet back so that the tack strip was exposed and my paint stick was like shredded. I think I went through a couple of them. It just kept shredded, dragging.
Better the paint stick than your fingers,
my
right?
My knuckles, exactly. That's kind of how I saw it. All right, folks, we have lines open. We're 704-570-1110. We're talking about keeping the critters out. I think we've kind of killed that topic or dealt with that topic. Next, we talk about this all the time, and it's one of those things, okay, just take one of them and don't put it off anymore. This is the perfect time to get out and deal with cracks in your concrete because the cooler weather allows the concrete to, you know, contract a little bit. The gap is opened up. You put a a sealant in there like Sikaflex or a product that's going to stay resilient or flexible once it cures so that in the summertime when things heat back up again, that crack gets tighter. It pushes, you know, the joint together, but the sealant does not crack out because it's not rigid. So this is a really good time. But David, you kind of have that down to a science. You want to just take a tiny detour and kind of walk us through really doing, you know, those kinds of repairs correctly?
Right. Well, I mean, obviously, if it's just an expansion joint and not a random crack that's right. going in all different directions, it's much easier to work expansion joints. But if you do have a crack, if the crack's too small, one of the things that needs to be done is it needs to be opened up a little bit. So you can use a diamond grinder. So just a blade, a 4 or 4.5 inch or even a bigger blade if you want. I just think a smaller grinder is easier to control. And you open that crack up a little bit. So you just follow the crack and it's chase it. Is what they call it. Right. And then they actually make a grinding wheel that is beveled on both sides that lays it open a little bit. So it gives you a little bit more surface area is a pretty good tool to use as well. But with all of that said, the most important thing is to if you have a small crack is to get it opened up so that you can actually get the product in there. But cleaning out the crack, is pretty important. So you want to make sure it's clean. Sometimes this can be a 2-day job, John, because you may actually need to use a pressure washer or a hose with an end on it to really get it blown out, depending on how dirty or how much debris is in the crack. So I think with that said, then you can just you can buy a product like John said, Sikaflex, and I always take a piece of cardboard to use as my work surface so I can lay my caulk gun, because that stuff is self-leveling. So once you cut that tube and you start using it, it continues to run out of the gun, especially if it's a warmer day or the sun's out. I'd like to have a little paint thinner and a rag handy just in case there's an accident or you get it on something you don't mean to. And then probably the best way is to tape on either side of the joint. That can get a little expensive if you have a lot to do, but I think if you don't use a caulk gun a lot and you're not used to that product, it's probably worth it.
But if you're taping that kind of scenario, you can get away with just regular masking tape. You don't need,
because you're not
going to damage the surface of the concrete when you pull it off.
Correct. Right? So regular masking tape is a little bit cheaper than the blue or the green tape. So it's a great point. You really don't need to spend the money on it. And I use that tape pretty regularly for, if we're covering things up with plastic or whatever, try not to put it on any surfaces, but that's great for concrete or putting it on bricks. Pretty sticky and it'll stay long enough to do what you need it to do. But other than that, you just go through and fill your joints. Now, if they're deep, again, back to the backer rod, you can take a size that needs to be a little bigger or wider in diameter than the crack itself, but you shove that down in the crack if they're real deep.
Right.
That'll keep you from losing a lot of product. And it also is really better because you don't need it that deep. You're really just working to trying to keep that product on the surface or close to the surface. Usually within a quarter to a half inch is sufficient.
And
I think with that, the biggest problem you have with it's color match, right?
Right. And I don't know. I did cracks out in the pool area, right? And so I've got concrete. You can see the crack, but it's better than knowing that's just going to get worse and worse and worse every single year that we go through freeze-thaw cycles, right? So,
well, yeah, the freeze-thaw. And then also, don't forget, if you let weeds and things like that continue to grow in those cracks, eventually they'll get thick enough that they'll actually start to lift the concrete.
Yep.
So, once that's how a tree starts, is small little weed look, and then now you got a big mess. So,
yeah,
it's a good idea, I think, to keep that cleaned out.
There you go. So, not difficult to do. It takes a minute, and like many things, preparation is sort of the order of the day. This is also, pardon me, a very good time of the year to get out and clean concrete and then seal it for the winter. And then you'll discover when you seal it for the winter, it's much easier just to hose it off in the spring when you get all those funky oak tag marks and stuff on it than having to pressure wash it, heavy duty again in the spring.
Well, red mud, everything comes off of it so much easier. That's kind of what we've discovered at our house.
It makes a difference. And it's the same thing, I guess. I mean, if you've got a lot of concrete areas to do, then just do kind of time it, right? Do a section or do one particular thing. If it's a front walk, do it. If it's a back walk, do it. If it's a patio, kind of pick it, one at a time. And you don't spend tons and tons of time and you don't spend tons and tons of money because some of these products are really good and really effective, but they're not super expensive. But they can be expensive and you don't want to waste them.
Right.
All right. We're up against our break. There's a question about aeration for lawns. We're getting close, but no, you can aerate now, get the seed down, and just make sure you use a starter fertilizer, keep the leaves off of it. You still have plenty of time as far as the temperature goes, to get a decent aeration and some seed started. 704-570-1110 is the number. We're going to take a little break, and then you can give us a call. You can give us a call if you don't mind hanging on through the break. Or you can go to AskJohnAndDave.com. Send us a question that way. Either way, we're going to be back to take more questions and talk more home improvement when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show, brought to you in part by DryPro.
A Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Answering your home improvement questions every Saturday on WPT. Presented by Charlotte Comfort Systems Heating and Air Conditioning and Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. On News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WPT.
Welcome back to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doble.
And we're taking your call, 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. Right now we're going to talk to Larry. Good morning, Larry. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. How are you?
Good morning. Always enjoy the show.
Well, thank you for listening.
In the last segment, y'all were talking about how to seed this late, that kind of thing.
We were not.
I would like to know if it's better.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
The leaves off after you've seeded, or to use a leaf blower. And then my second part of my question is, and I'll take it off the air. When can you put down weed feed after you've seeded? And I seeded and aerated the 2nd or 3rd of October.
Okay.
Thanks again. Enjoy the show.
All right. Thanks, Larry. So there's a reason this is called the Home Improvement Show and not the Lawn and Garden Show. We're not particularly expert in those things, but I think we can help Larry with both of those questions. Number one, after you've seeded, do you rake the leaves off or blow the leaves off? Well, I do my aeration and seeding a little as soon as I think it makes sense to do that, so it's not going to be cooking hot, because I want the seeds to sprout and be pretty decently rooted before I blow the leaves. I don't rake because that's pretty aggressive. This is Larry. This advice is worth everything you paid for it, right? It's how I do it, and there may be some smarter lawn and garden people out there listening right now who could offer better advice than that. But blowing versus raking, definitely blow, but don't do it until you see those sprouts are up and they've had a couple of weeks to germinate and get some kind of root in there, so you don't literally blow them away. That is not so long. And then when do you put weed and feed down after you've seeded? So I think that's if you're a fan of my Cousin Vinny, that movie, I would say that's a trick question, Your Honor. I think you would not do weed and feed if you have just seeded. You would do weed and feed as a fall treatment. And if you want a really cool program, Scotts has a kind of a program that goes through, I think they might have either 4 or 6 different things that you do in the course of the year, and they give you a calendar, tell you how to do it. It's actually a pretty good program. But if you've just put down seed, you would put down starter fertilizer, not a weed and feed product. I believe is the correct way to think about that. The other thing in our climate or in our world that you really want to do, and Larry, it's a little bit late right now, but it's something you can do in the spring. It's impossible to do too much of this. And that is add lime to your soil, or even lime and sand, just to help break it up. We have, like, here's a news flash, we have nasty clay soil in this neck of the woods, right? So lime, and it tends to be low pH, which is why azaleas and, you know, those acid-loving plants thrive so well in our soil. But for a lawn, it's a little bit tougher, right? So low pH for lawn is not optimal. So liming is putting down lime, pelletized lime is also a really good best practice. Right now, if you've already aerated and already put the seed down, let it get hold and then get rid of the leaves with a blower. I would not, if you haven't put a starter fertilizer down, I wouldn't even do that now because you're going to be walking all over the new sprouts and rolling it over with a broadcast spreader. Let's let Mother Nature do what she's going to do. And now we know for next year. I hope that answers your question, Larry. If not, 704-570-1110. Give us a call back or send us a note at AskJohnAndDave.com. David, what did I miss in there or what might have been not have been 100% right?
No, I think you were right. And I think the window's closing for weed and feed anyway, but I think it's multiple. You have to cut the grass multiple times before you apply it. That means that it's strong enough that it's grown and the roots are deep enough that it won't injure it. But I think the colder weather has something to do too. If you miss that window, then you have to wait till spring for the weed and feed, which is probably the best thing for Larry at this time.
And I look, this is not a Scotts commercial. You can get other great products. Vigoro and things have, you know, exactly the same chemicals and stuff in it. But there is a regimen that Scotts has out there, and I've used it, and I stopped using the lawn service just because I realized, hey, if I have intelligent advice, I can do this. And they have a early spring, which is typically a pre-emergent, and then spring, which kind of helps build bolster the lawn for the summer ahead. There's a summer version that helps prevent issues from drought, and then there's a fall turf builder. And then there's one that you can put down just about any time, but I think that the it's like what is it, like the fertilizer usually has like three numbers, I think, like 10 10 10. I think it's nitrogen, phosphorus, and potash, right?
Correct.
And the way I was taught it was the numbers are top down all around. So nitrogen is top, green it up. Phosphorus is down, a root system, and then potash is just general all around because everybody looks better with a little bit of potash on them. I don't know. you have exceeded my...
Yeah, that could go a lot of different directions.
Yeah, let's just keep, in fact, I say we take a break. We snuck past the break. 704-570-1110. We are going to take a break, and we'll be back after these important messages. Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I am John Gordon.
I'm Dave Dolville.
704-570-1110. 704-570-1110 is our number. We're going to talk to Robert. Good morning, Robert. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. You've helped me in the past, so I'm hoping you can shed some light on a question I have.
Let's give it a shot.
I recently retired from teaching and started my projects. Got my trees taken care of.
Good for you.
Got my roof taken care of. Pretty sure I'm going to go with Window Nation on the windows, and Dry Pro has already done an excellent job for me underneath the house. I got a letter concerning insurance to cover what I would call my water tie-in line at the street to the house, and the letter kind of inferred your homeowner's insurance probably covers whatever inside your house. This insurance is to cover if anything occurs between the water, where I call the water tie-in at the meter, to the house. I've seen some of my neighbors having their front yard dug up, and I'm kind of in the dark and was wondering if y'all could shed any light. Is this a good idea, do you think, or a bad idea? And it's, I'm not trying to put the onus on you.
No,
I'm
you just, can't. Cause
I'm just curious about any ideas or suggestions.
Yeah, that's a great question, and it's not unusual. Utility companies, different electrical utilities will do the same thing for power coming into your house from, you know, the street or wherever, that portion of it that is on your property and you own. They'll have a little prevention or insurance policy. It's a good thing for the utility company because they make it's a non commodity or non product related source of revenue. And as long as it's good and fair, it makes sense. I don't know what they're charging, what they're suggesting per month would be the cost. Do you know
it's
what that is?
It's about $30, roughly about, it looks like it's, I'm sorry, that's not right. It's about $7 to $8 a month for
yeah.
a year.
Yeah. That sounds about right. And so it's up to you. It's, if it's in your budget, it certainly is prudent because if something happens, and it depends where you live, David, you remember there were entire neighborhoods that used, this is going back into the 80s, they used a version of flexible black supply line pipe to go from the water meter into the house. And those mm-hmm. things, if they weren't laid perfectly straight and no rocks or anything, we had big issues with those stretches of that pipe failing, and that was expensive to repair. So if it depends on the home you're living in.
It's a Trotter home built literally in the 1980s, and I understand originally it was tied into a septic tank in the back, mm-hmm. but when I purchased it in 2003, the owner informed me, he said, no, you're tied into city water, city sewer, city everything. Mm-hmm. And then, as I say, I saw a couple of my neighbors having their yard dug up, and I queried them about what, and they said, well, blah, 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 and I went, oh. And then I started seeing the letters, and I thought, well, I better call you guys and see what your thoughts were, because I was with you. I thought, you know, better safe than sorry.
Yeah. I don't know. I think go ahead, David.
I was just thinking, you know, the other thing is it's hard to compare unless you know what it would cost to replace that water line. So maybe get a plumber if you have a plumber that you use. If you don't, we can recommend a couple. So get them out and have them give you a price on what it would take to install a new line. They're not going to dig the other one up. They're just going to going to detach the old one. And
I queried one of the guys that was doing the physical labor part of it, and they told me, they said, the most expensive thing is, you know, getting the backhoe out and digging the doggone thing up, digging something or slit trenching it. And I've had some experience, working on pools. And I said, so it's getting this piece of equipment out. He said, that's where you're starting to hear the thing go ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching. He said, laying the new line. He said, you know, it's the same thing as with a pool and the PVC. But he said, honestly, he said, you're paying for the physical labor part of it when the truck comes out and has to dig the new trench.
Yeah, I think the challenge
is.
It kind
of made sense.
Yeah, it doesn't. Okay. It almost doesn't matter which part of it.
A retired church teacher could dig that ditch.
He says no. I think what portion of it is expensive is almost irrelevant. At the bottom line, is like you're going to write a check for an amount of money, whether 6 cents of it goes to labor and 10,000 goes to product or vice versa. You're writing a $10,000 check.
So $3,000.
Okay. So here's something to consider.
Yes, sir.
David made a great suggestion. Call a plumber and say, hey, what will it cost me to replace my line?
Okay.
$3,000. Then you say, okay, I have $3,000 in a savings account right now, and I'm willing to invest that and that's my insurance policy, right? I've replaced it, so that's my insurance policy. Option number two, $3,000 is what it costs. You're like, I can save $30 a month or whatever it is for 10 or I got to do the math on that. It's more than 10 months.
Yeah. 10 years. You're
10 good. Years. So, so you say, I'm going to accrue my own insurance policy and put it aside and I'll earn a little bit of interest on it. You know, if the Fed continues, that number will get better.
Yep.
And so I'm going to write, you know, my Robert insurance policy, and I'm going to pay my savings account, my premium every month. The challenge is if you need to do your $3,000 before the Robert insurance policy has collected enough premiums, you have a gap, right?
Perfect.
Okay. And then the third is an iteration of the second, which is, okay, I'm going to call my guy out at $3,000. He's going to do it. So, but I'm not going to do it until whenever. So you say, I've got 6 months to accrue $3,000 on my own. And then, of course, the fourth is the one you started with, pay the whatever it is per month, and just have it covered. And it doesn't create havoc with your budget. You don't have to think about it. So you've got some options now. But
Okay.
Right.
But planning like for this event is good.
It makes sense. It's a lot of good common sense. Well, I teach history, so. I wouldn't have gone that avenue, but I get it. Well, thank you, gentlemen. Once again, you have helped me. I really, really appreciate it, and enjoy your show.
We appreciate the call, Robert, and I love history, so good for you.
There you go. Awesome. All right, y'all have a nice day. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Robert. We see that a lot with the different utility companies. I don't know that it's a bad thing, you know, if you...
I don't either. I just think you just have to make sure you read through the fine print and make sure there's not a deductible or it doesn't cover this or it doesn't cover that. And just you know, read through it so when the plumber gets there, you have a pretty good idea of, you know, what you may run into while you're changing it. So, you know, because obviously if there's rock or something in the way when they're digging, then they're not going to cover
that.
So there's lots of little caveats.
Robert's a history teacher. He said, historically, in my neighborhood, these kinds of things happen. Maybe I should take action. Kudos for Robert. Okay, 704-570-1110. Give us a call. We're talking about home improvement. We were talking about getting ready for the winter months and sealing up the house. There's a couple, and you know, sealing up concrete, fixing cracks. There's a couple really simple things that just make sense also. And that would be if you leave furniture out over the winter, just because there's nowhere to store it, inevitably you get a little bit of black funk on it, some mold, mildew. You may want to consider, or if you're taking your cushions in for the winter time, right? And, you know, stashing them away, it may be worthwhile to, I do this on the cushions and some of the lawn furniture, spray it with Concrobium, let it dry. I let them dry in the sun. And then I put them in a bag and put them up in the overhead in the garage. And it just keeps any kind of moisture or any kind of mildew that would grow on them in the off season from growing. It makes it much easier to clean some of the surfaces on the furniture and so on in the springtime. Also, I've got these kind of mesh looking, lounge chairs by the pool that I absolutely love. They're super durable, but they'll get a little bit of mildew on it when they sit over the sun, over the winter. And so I spray them. And that's just the proverbial ounce of prevention. And so there. That's as much as I have written down, David. I'm not sure. I feel like you've told us before that you do certain things for winterizing, but not ready. And I know we're going to be right up against a break. So we've got a question from Tim. We're going to ask you to hang on through the break here for us. I'm sure we can help you out. We just need to take a hard stop here in just a few seconds. Folks, this is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. You can call us at 704-570-1110, and we'll get to you after we get to Tim. Or you can send us a note at askjohnanddave.com, and we'll answer your question that way. Any way you slice it, we're going to be back after these important messages. Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
And we've got some lines open. We're at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. Give us a call. Right now we're going to talk to Tim. Good morning, Tim. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. How are you this morning?
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Good.
Enjoy your show. We've got a house that we're remodeling. It's got the 1980s fiberglass tubs in them. They're really dull finished. They're not cracked or anything. We can't find anyone that can recondition those. Can you give us the tips on how we could do it, or is there somebody you know that we might contact about that?
Yeah. There's some folks who can refinish it. I don't know if Bathcrest is still around, David, or if they'll redo fiberglass. I think they do. But also in Bath Fitters, don't they have a solution for that?
Yeah, they have a it's like a liner that they could put over top of the tub, and I think they can do the walls as well. So that's one method, and then Surface Specialists, I think, is one company, and Miracle Method. Those folks also recoat fiberglass, I believe.
Surface Specialist, Miracle Specialist.
And Miracle Method, I think, is the name of that company.
Is that just a process of just the tubs aren't broken or anything? They're in relatively good shape. They just mm-hmm. need to be cleaned really well. Is that just a
yeah? They take the hardware. Yeah, take the hardware off, and what happens is the gel coat starts to yellow, mm-hmm. and so they're gonna respray those. So they either take the hardware off or tape it all up. It's probably better if you take it off, and then they clean it really well, and then they go through the process of putting their coatings on. You know, I think probably the big thing is just to find out how they guarantee the finish, and then for you folks to make sure you know what the do's and don'ts are as far as cleaners. Obviously nothing real aggressive on there as far as something that will scratch. So, you know, things like scouring powders and things of that nature are probably a no-no.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem is they've been neglected and haven't been cleaned properly in the past. And they have a real dull finish to them, sort of a dirty finish looking to them. So
they do.
Can you polish those out like you would a fiberglass car or something?
I think they can be polished out with some compounds and a buffer with a big bonnet on it. But I think, John, the biggest problem is it's the yellowing of the. If that's not a problem, then you're fine.
There's a couple problems. You can buff it out. We've heard different stories where folks will use like a polishing compound or an automotive buffing compound. The challenge is what's giving you trouble is the gel coat. And as when you buff those things out, you are attacking that gel coat surface. So while it takes the color away, it takes the issues away, it also exposes that to further issues. Like it's more prone to issues because that protective surface has now been compromised, right?
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's best to have somebody that kind of does that routinely, and they're probably going to come up with a chemical bond solution, or to David's point, like Bath Fitters will actually have a kind of a shroud, so to speak, that'll just cover it over and look like brand new.
Okay. Well, thanks. We appreciate your information.
Thank you for the call, Tim, and thank you for waiting through the break for us. All right, Tim is off to see if he can get that tub shower unit looking spiffy again, and we're gonna. I didn't want to go straight to our Home Depot product of the week with Tim Holden, so we're gonna do our Home Depot product of the week right now. And I think it's a great one. It's a life-proof, waterproof luxury vinyl tile, and it's. It can be applied or it can be put down in bathrooms, kitchen, places where there's going to be water. And because of the way the joint fits together, you don't have an issue with water. It's also pet proof. We've always talked about what is the wear layer on vinyl tile, LVT, because it can be anywhere from, you know, just barely meeting HUD specifications to a stout, you know, 20 mil plus. And so to have a lifetime warranty and to be warranted in a high traffic area or with pets, this product makes it great. And it's not super expensive. I think I did the math on a 12 by 12 room. You're probably around $550, maybe $600. It'll vary a little bit, maybe from city to city, depending on freight and things like that. But it's an awesome product. And we're going into the holidays, and it's difficult sometimes to get labor done in the time that you want it. You don't have to be a wizard to install this. It's not difficult as a do-it-yourself project. So that's it. That's our Home Depot product of the week. Life-proof, waterproof, high-traffic, luxury vinyl tile. Check it out. All right. Let's see, David. We've kind of gone down. I think we talked about Concrobium. I think we've kind of beat to death the, the kind of getting ready for the fall. And we'll talk specifically about colder weather and auxiliary heat and some safety items, but I think we want to talk to Ann first. Good morning, Ann. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. How are you?
Good morning.
Good morning, Ann. How are you? Do you have a question?
I do. On a previous show, you all were talking about something that you could use on the wood deck, and we also have a wooden playhouse. Mm-hmm. But I can't remember exactly what it was. I wanted to say it had something to do with cedar or pine, and mm-hmm. you put it on, and you guys said it would protect the wood for a long time.
Mm-hmm. David?
Yeah, we were talking about a product called Cedar Shield.
Cedar Shield, thank you. That's what I could not remember.
And it is, you purchase that through Cedarside, and that's .com, C-I-D-E, is the second part of that name. You can also click on our that product on our website under, I think, products.
Okay.
And that will take you directly there. It doesn't do away with a top coat sealer or stain. What that product does, Ann, is it keeps water from absorbing into the wood, so it stabilizes it, and that's what they call themselves as a stabilizer. It's a wood stabilizer because if water can't take on moisture, it can't swell, so it can't get large and swell up and then shrink and go through that cycle multiple times. That's what causes it to crack and warp and split. So,
and that's what happens with ours. We're
and that's what you want. So,
yes.
So once you do that, so you have to wait after you apply it. So you would do your cleaning and do all the things that you need to do, like you were prepping it for a stain. The only difference is you could put the Cedar Shield, and they recommend you apply it while it's damp, not standing water, but damp. What it'll do is that draws it into the wood, and then it pushes the moisture out the other side. And then for many, many, many years, it will keep water from absorbing. Once you apply it, you wait 72 hours, and then you can apply the stain or another sealer of your choice.
Oh, okay, good then. I'll look for that on your website under products, but now I have the name, I'll know.
All right.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate your taking my call.
Thank you, Ann. We appreciate the call. Have a great day. All right. With Ann's call, we snuck a little bit past our break, so we'll go ahead and take that. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave, and we will return after these important messages. Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
Wrapping it up, this is our lightning round, 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. Give us a call. We'll talk about what questions you might have on your mind until we return next week. The topic right now is just auxiliary heat. We're headed into the chilly season. We know that if you heat with oil, and there's very few in our neck of the woods that do that, but if you heat with oil, it's going to be very difficult and very expensive winter. Wow. I was listening to, I think, a public television thing, where they were interviewing some folks from the Northeast, and it's ugly, and it's probably going to get worse. That means there'll probably be a proliferation of auxiliary heat, you know, electric heaters and things like that, and that's great. It's wonderful to be able to dial down the thermostat and still stay comfortable in a particular room. We would just caution you that you got to be careful. I don't know what the statistics are, David. I'm sure somebody in fire prevention knows how many home fires a year are started either with kerosene heaters or unattended. Auxiliary heaters, space heaters, or extension cords, or bad wiring. Somebody ran an extension cord under a rug, so, you know, because I wanted it there for the entire season, but didn't pay attention to it. It shorted out. There's just a lot of little things that can go wrong with a pretty simple solution. And we're not trying to peddle panic. That's not the intention, but we do want you to be serious about it. But so maybe before we go into the safety pieces of it, David, I think there's two kinds of auxiliary heat. One is convection, which I think it heats the air and it just creates like a convection current, right? The hot air rises, cooler air takes its place. As it cools off, it drops and you just get a convection current going, and you can heat a pretty large area with a reasonable device. And they'll have fans and different stuff, different things on them. And so that's helpful. The other is radiant, and that tends to be like the infrared heaters you see in some like more commercial applications, although there are domestic or residential applications for that also. And it doesn't heat the air at all. It just heats objects that it hits, right? It's almost like a light wave. You don't see a light wave technically until it hits something and reflects off of it. The same is true with the radiant heat. It's very efficient, but it also doesn't do bigger areas, right? It's not as effective in larger areas. You and I talked about one that I think was a favorite of yours, though, a while back, the oil-filled radiator-looking one.
Yeah, for
are you still a fan?
I am. Especially if you're a limited budget, it's great. It's safe, and it tends to, after it's heated, if you do turn it off, it still gives off heat for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of neat without being plugged in because it's heated up the oil in the radiator. But it looks like a radiator. It's not technically a radiator, but I guess.
No, it looks exactly like one. Yeah, it's got hot liquid in it like a radiator does.
Mm-hmm. It's permanent. They're pretty neat, and they're not real expensive, and I think it's a good safe way to heat. Again, just to reiterate, plugged directly into the socket, not into a cord. Should never plug anything like that into an extension cord.
I think, you know, I spoke about tucking a cord under a rug and frayed wires and things like that. I think perhaps to your point, David, a greater challenge is somebody uses just a conventional little utility 18 gauge, wider brown extension cord and plugs one of these heaters into it that's pulling more current than is safe for that extension cord, and things start to heat up, and then that's when we get in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Also keeping it away from drapes and upholstery and things that can catch fire, and away from places where kids can get at it, right? I believe the a UL label requires that they have a tip-over safety switch. I'm not sure if I'm speaking accurately when I say that or not, but you do want to look for that device also. And all it does is it's got a kind of like a dead man switch on it. And if it tips over, rather than, you know, pouring hot air or in the radiant heater cases into a carpet or something that's going to become flammable or burst into flames, it just shuts off. So another safety piece of it. That's as much. I don't see kerosene heaters in the marketplace as much as I recall seeing them, you know, back in the early 80s. Is there a reason for that, or what is the reason for that? Do you know?
Well, kerosene went up so high that it doesn't make sense to burn them.
It used to be an inexpensive way to have auxiliary heat.
Right.
Okay.
And then, of course, you have the normal, the 100% or 99.999% CO2-free gas burners, so propane or natural gas, that you can mount those on a wall to heat a room. And I know that natural gas is up, but again, it's a safe way to heat.
Yeah.
An area without having to heat an entire house. So pretty neat products.
I saw some Rinnai, the on-demand water heater people, have some very nice wall-mounted direct vent, so you don't have to run, you know, ductwork everywhere. It's direct vent. It does have to go on an outside wall, though. But some really nice, many times when you have those devices inside the house, they're just aesthetically displeasing. They're like this monstrous thing. But these looked pretty low profile. And of course, Rinnai is a name that many, many know in all respects. So I thought that was a more permanent, very acceptable solution. As you say, you have to have natural gas or propane to make that work, but certainly an option. So, David, we have a whole list of home safety things, and I think we're just going to save that for another day because we got about a minute left before we need to, as the radio people say, skedaddle. So I won't head us down that path. I do encourage folks, if you've got questions that we haven't answered, send us a note at AskJohnAndDave.com. We're happy to take care of that also. And then we'll dive headlong, I think, into the safety topics. We did a lot of fire safety last week, and I think next week we'll talk just about home safety in general, because it's we're going to be inside now more for the balance of the year and into the spring, and it just makes sense to A, make it comfortable, and B, make it safe. And on that happy note, I think it's time for us to wrap this up. Folks, we genuinely appreciate your listening and your calling. We hope it was as informative for you as it was enjoyable for us. And you know, if you've listened ever, that we like to end the show with a recommendation for what we think is the most important kind of home improvement. And that's the home improvement that makes your home a happier place to live in. As you work on all the other things, getting ready for the holidays, getting ready for the cooler weather, don't forget to work on that. And we'll see you next week when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave.